My grandfather gave me something that was really special. I don't think I could even say in words exactly what that was, but there are things about him and his life that I remember.
Life learns you more than a book, than you look with your eyes, and you try to understand what you see. So this is my life. Now I come to this stage, but I'm going already back. You understand?
I guess I still don't understand, not really. I always knew that I loved my grandfather, but back when these recordings were made, I guess I took him for granted. Everything he said was so simple. Now, when I hear his voice, it's like I'm in that room with him again at the Paradise Hotel in Long Beach, New York. It's 1970, I'm 22 years old, and my grandfather is, well, let me see now.
If I'll tell you, I was born 1881. So how old I am, I'll give you a pencil.
1881?
Yeah, 1881.
Wow.
And now it's 1970.
That's 89 years.
So 89 years, right?
Yeah.
Of course, when you get old, you look different. Because that what you see now, I saw already.
Yeah.
But what I see now, you didn't see. You gotta wait till you come to this stage.
I saw my grandfather all the time when I was growing up. He lived with us. My parents were both teachers, and so I spent more time with him than I did with them. We all called him Papa. His friends called him Silverman. That was his name, Isidore Silverman. And it fit him. He was a silver man. In all the years I knew him, and that was about 25 years, he always dressed in exactly the same outfit, which was a gray cardigan sweater, gray pants that he wore very high above the waist, and a soft gray cap, underneath which there was a tuft of thin silver gray hair. In the 50s, my family lived in an apartment house in Forest Hills. Papa, my brother Jeffrey, and I shared a bedroom together. At night, Jeffrey and I used to witness my grandfather's ritual of getting undressed. He did it exactly the same way every night, taking off his clothes and carefully folding them onto a chair. He wore long underwear all year round, even in the hottest days of the summer. Underneath the long underwear, his legs were wrapped in gauze bandages. He'd unwrap the bandages, and his pale legs would shine in the lamplight. Then he'd open a jar of salve, and he'd take out a tongue depressor, and he'd put this glob of green salve on it, and he'd apply it all over his legs. And then Papa would go to sleep, and after a while, he'd start to snore, and it would wake me up. And so I would wake him up, I'd ask him to get me a glass of water, and he always did. And then, every so often, maybe once every couple of months, Papa would get bad dreams, and he'd start to make these very scary sounds in the middle of the night. My brother Jeffrey can still do a pretty good imitation of it.
Build it and build it and build it until all of a sudden you go like, oh, face me, I face me, I face me, like that, and then he would like relax and he'd go back.
You have to remember that these sounds were coming from my grandfather, who was the kindest, most gentle person I ever knew. So it made it all the more scary to hear him have these dreams. I never asked him what it was that he dreamt about, but I figured that it must have been the pogroms. When he was a young man in Odessa, Russia, around the turn of the century, the Jews were persecuted in sporadic purges that they called the pogroms. You had to go into hiding, leave the country, or risk being killed. Well, in 1905, there was a pogrom in Odessa where they killed 500 Jews. My grandfather and his wife hid in a cellar for 4 days. When it was over, they took what little money they had and emigrated to America. Papa taught himself how to read and write in English, and in 1913, he became an American citizen. It was around that time that my mom was born.
My first memory of my father is we lived in an apartment, and I slept in the kitchen because Papa felt it would be warmer, and he had a Franklin stove. Well, Papa would get up early in the morning and warm the room up, and then he would gently wake me. And my first recollection is sticking one foot out, and Papa would put a sock on, Then I'd put the other foot out, and he'd do that. That was my first remembrance of Papa taking care of me. And, of course, he walked me to school.
That's my mom. When she grew up, she sometimes worked in the fruit and vegetable store that Papa ran. It was in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and outside the front door, trolleys ran right down the middle of the street. My mom's high school sweetheart got his first job working at Papa's store. He got paid about...
$2, 16 hours work.
My dad. After he and Mom got married, they lived across the street from the store in Greenpoint. Years later, when Papa's wife died and he closed the fruit store, he came to live with my parents. That's around the time that I was born.
Yes, Jimmy, dear, you're very dear to me because when you was born, I was in the next room. After when the Abram came out, it's a boy. It's a Mazel Tov, and I came in, I kissed Mama and everything. And since then, and that's the way it goes. This is the life.
Every morning, Papa would put out the same breakfast for me, a bagel with cream cheese and a glass of orange juice. And every day, he would walk me to school.
He actually took pride in taking care of you. And I think to a certain extent, he was hurt when you began growing up and you didn't want to have an older person escorting you all the time.
It's true. There I was in the sixth grade. My grandfather was still walking me to school. It was embarrassing. When I got home from school, Papa would inevitably sit down and read one of his Jewish papers, either the Day or the Forward. He had a good-sized library of books in Yiddish, and each one of them was in immaculate condition in a plain brown paper jacket. At night, we'd watch television together, but if there was the slightest hint of any kind of violence, I mean, if the opening credits of Gunsmoke came on the screen, Papa would get up and walk out of the room. The programs he liked were Lawrence Welk and Ed Sullivan, who he called Ed Solomon. Before bedtime, my grandfather would take a bath, and he'd always turn up the hot water all the way. And one night, when I was a senior in high school, and I was home alone with Papa, and I was watching television, he was taking a bath. All of a sudden, I hear this loud thud coming from the bathroom, so I went and I knocked on the door. "Hey, Pop, you all right?" There's no reply. He'd locked the door and the water was still running. "Pop, you okay?" I ran and I got a screwdriver. I took off the doorknob and I got inside. It was like a steam bath. The water was overflowing the tub and Pop was lying face up on the blue tile floor. I lifted his head up and his skin felt very soft and fragile. "Poppy, are you all right? We told you not to turn the water so hot. It makes you dizzy." And he opened his eyes. And he looked at me and he said, "God bless you, Jimbala." Well, not long after that, my parents decided that with me going away to college, it would be best for Papa to go to one of those senior citizen homes. So we took him to the Paradise Hotel on the boardwalk in Long Beach. Whenever I'd come home on vacation, I'd always visit Papa there. And it was on one of these trips that I made these recordings.
Yes, yes, my dear boy, it's good to have a grandson who has in his mind to come to see his grandpa. I'm just telling you the truth. It's very good. Makes you feel very good. And then after I met my friend, I say, "You know who was? My grandson came to see me." And everybody say, "Oh, how nice it is." You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the life from a person. Especially when he comes of the old age and he's not in business no more and he's not a very rich man, he's sitting like this between people. So this is, when you got a day like this, this is a holiday for him.
Years later, when I was trying my hand at being a folk singer, it was always a real struggle to sit down and try and write a song. Except there was one night when I knew that it was time to write a song about my grandfather. It just poured out of me as if somebody else was writing it.
When I was younger, you told me about how you left your country before the war broke out. You landed in New York with a branch of the family tree. I remember some faces, but they're mostly names to me. You were working in your store, tying packages with string. Was I ever really there? Did I imagine the whole thing? But the feeling is still with me that it was a magical place. And I remember it just like I remember the look of love written on your face. When I got out of school each day, you were there to walk me home. I'm ashamed to say that sometimes I wish I walked alone. And when I finally just told you that I'm older now, can't you see? You just said, listen, you can tell your friends you were walking me. Later when you weren't living with us anymore, I saw you at the hotel and you met me at the door. I told you what I was feeling and all of the things I tried. And when I asked how it was for you, you said that you were satisfied. And you had your books and papers, and you read them as you'd sit. And you'd stare outside of the window, and you'd say that this is it. And though you didn't talk much, I can still hear your words inside. You were with me when I was born, and I was with you when you died. You were with me when I was born, and I was with you when you died. Thank you.